My name is Brian Standing. Welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz for this Monday, April 29th, 2013. The American Civil Liberties Union is taking the State Department of Administration to task in federal court. The Progressive's Rebecca Kemble will join us to tell us a little bit more about that. Well, is the Wisconsin Capitol truly a public forum? Does the First Amendment apply in the rotunda? Can the police limit what people say when they say it, or how many people join them in saying it? These issues and others, including Elizabethan theater of all things, are under discussion in Kissick v. Hipsch, currently in Wisconsin Western District Federal Court. The Progressive Magazine's Rebecca Kemble has been following the testimony, and she joined us by phone to fill us in on the details. Welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz, Rebecca.
Thanks, Brian.
So in your write-up on the testimony in the initial hearing, you quote from Alice in Wonderland. What about the testimony made you feel like you'd just fallen down a rabbit hole?
The arguments that the Department of Justice were making were completely absurd. In particular, there was one quote that I quoted from DOJ Assistant Attorney General Maria Lazar, who said, "We keep giving them more rights and they keep complaining." And that was in reference to the judge Conley trying to wrap his brain around, you know, what are these new proposed rules? And what speech is protected and what isn't? And so basically, Lazar was saying, well, look, we've said that you need a permit for any kind of speech that would be considered a performance or rally or event, no matter how many people are there. But if it's protected political speech, you only need a permit if it's four or more people. So that's when she said, look, we're giving them more rights, but they keep complaining. Because at least three of them, they don't need a permit. And that makes them special when they're using political speech. Because otherwise, you need a permit for one person.
Okay, so let's back up just a little bit here. So for our listeners who may not be familiar with this, what is this case about, and who are the who's the plaintiff and who's the defendant here?
Okay, the plaintiff is Michael Kissick and the ACLU, and the defendant is the State of Wisconsin Department of Administration and Capitol Police.
And what is Kissick's argument here? What's his basic thrust?
Kissick is saying that there's prior restraint on his First Amendment right when the state creates rules, not only creates rules, but kind of randomly enforces the rules on needing a permit in the Capitol for, you know, performance, rally, etc., by arresting and citing people for singing songs over the noon hour in the rotunda.
And the state's argument in counter to that is what?
The state's argument is they have to maintain control of the building, they have to know who's in there, and they have to be able to respond with, given the size of their police force, they have to be able to know how many people are going to be in there and staff accordingly. So really, it's a really creepy security state police staffing argument that they're using to defend themselves.
And who's Michael Kissick? Let's start there. Who is he?
Michael Kissick is a citizen. He lives sort of near downtown and works at the university. He's someone for whom freedom of assembly and freedom of speech is very important, and he's been extremely distressed and dismayed at Walker administration policy, a lot of it, you know, not just the Act 10 that brought out hundreds of thousands of people into the street 2 years ago, but the continued sort of takeover of state government and hollowing out of state agencies that he sees occurring. And he finds that his representatives in the Assembly and the Senate have no voice, and because of the majorities, the Republican majorities, who just disregard and really don't take into consideration any opposing views when making laws these past 2 years. And he feels that the only way he can petition his government is to directly sing songs in the Capitol Rotunda at noon.
But he hasn't done that recently. Why?
He hasn't done it recently because he, again, back in September, okay, so a new chief of police was hired over the summer, last summer. And when that person, David Irwin, who is a former Marine drill sergeant, and he was a former, he most recently worked in Walker's, as Walker's personal bodyguard in the Dignitary Protection Unit. Okay, so he was hired in the summer, and he decided, or his boss, Mike Hipps, the Department of Administration Secretary, decided that he was going to enforce new rules that had about access to the Capitol and conduct within the Capitol that had been written in December 2011 but never enforced. So starting in September, he began enforcing these rules by arresting people who participated in the sing-along. And what Michael Kissick observed was that the rules were being enforced selectively only on people who were opposing Walker during the noon hour in the sing-along, and that others who were exhibiting the same kinds of behaviors were not being arrested and handcuffed and dragged out of the building. So he's someone, he said things like, you know, I don't want any cross with the law. I have a clean record. I don't even have a speeding ticket. And I don't want to jeopardize, you know, getting arrested while exercising my First Amendment. So he sees this as a situation in which his First Amendment rights are being restrained even when he doesn't exercise them for the fear of being arrested.
So while this testimony is going on, at some point the judge and I believe the defense attorney for the state start discussing Shakespeare. How did that come about?
Well, this was about the who needs a permit. And it was Maria Lazar, the assistant attorney general herself, who brought it up. She said, so if there's one person in the rotunda reciting Shakespeare, they would need a permit. And the judge said, wait. You mean if I'm even just walking through the Capitol and I am, you know, talking in an animated way with a friend about Shakespeare and we're quoting Shakespeare, that would be considered a performance for which a permit is required? And she said, yes. And he said, but if I am arguing about whether or not Shakespeare should be taught in school with that same friend or with two other friends, that is protected political speech and I wouldn't need a permit? And she said, correct. So what the defense is arguing is that the Capitol Police have to make content-based decisions based on who they are going to arrest and ticket and who they aren't. And this is a kind of a fundamental part to First Amendment cases about do enforcement officers have to make judgment calls as to whether the speech is political and whether it's protected. So in this case, the police would have to decide, well, is this, you know, if it's a group of three or less and they're quote-unquote performing or speaking loudly, you know, in the rotunda, which, by the way, the rotunda was designed for citizens to come in and speak and petition their government. But the police, the individual police officers, have to decide whether it's political speech or not, and then, you know, arrest or not arrest based on that determination.
Now, I mean, one of the understandings I've always had about the First Amendment is that the regulations can't be content-based. So how is the state justifying having regulations that, in effect, are based on the content of your speech?
Well, I think You might want to talk to a First Amendment attorney to get the real specifics on this, but there can be some content-based restrictions as long as they're very narrowly tailored to time, place, and manner.
Right.
So we've seen in the past, at large demonstrations like the big Republican and Democratic conventions, there are these caged areas where protesters are allowed to protest, but because of public safety reasons, the police are confining, they're allowing protests to happen. Or like we just saw in Dallas, a judge allowed protest against George Bush and the opening of his library. They allowed it to happen across the street from where this was happening, and that was sort of a designated protest area. So the Capitol Police are failed to write their policy in such a way that was, they wanted to restrict that language to the ground floor of the rotunda. And they, in their practice, they've really only arrested people holding banners and signs that have been on upper floors, except they have also arrested people who they have deemed to be the leader of this sing-along group who have been on the ground floor as well. So it's a very messed up policy.
So what's at stake here? I mean, are we looking at a potential landmark decision touching freedom of speech in this that could set a national precedent?
I think we are either way. And so the hearing 2 weeks ago was just based on a motion for a preliminary injunction. This wasn't the whole trial. It was just the defendant asking the judge to tell the state to cease and desist issuing people citations for participating in the sing-along. So the judge was considering, two very, very narrow questions within this. One, whether their rules are content-based, and if so, do they adhere to the standard of narrowly tailored to time, place, and manner? And there was another question raised regarding the costs associated with a permit, but language around that was clarified to the defendant's approval. So what the judge is going to be deciding whether or not to enjoin the state, to prevent the state from enforcing their policy as the trial continues.
So basically, if the plaintiffs are successful,
that decision could be groundbreaking.
Okay. So the plaintiffs are asking the judge to require that the Capitol Police no longer issue citations for people singing on the ground floor of the Capitol, for example. That's
right, as a preliminary injunction. Then as the trial continues, what they'll be asking for is a permanent ban on the state for doing that.
Okay. So what can you tell so far about how the case is going from the testimony you've heard? Does the judge seem convinced by either argument, or is it too early to tell?
The judge felt like he was going down the rabbit hole. Some of his facial expressions and his follow-up questioning of the state reflected really a state of astoundment at the kinds of arguments the state was making. But the judge isn't there to, force the state to be logical. The judge is there to force the state and everyone to follow the law. And so there was one outstanding question that he asked the defendants to provide him more case law on, and that was to this very question of, is it a violation of the First Amendment if people's First Amendment political speech is given greater leeway than regular speech? So again, it's this question of anyone needs a permit versus four or more people need a permit for political speech. And yet he could see the absurdity and the sort of straw man argument in these rules, that it basically taking everyone's rights away and then giving a few rights back to groups of three people or fewer for political speech. So he was asking the lawyers to sharpen their argument, to show him case law where, even in cases where some speech is privileged over others, the First Amendment is still being violated. And that's what we're waiting for, his decision on that right now.
It seems like these rules put the officers, the police officers who have to make these decisions, in a pretty difficult position. I mean, they're basically being asked to try and make a determination on the spot, on the ground, whether speech is political or not, and then try and react accordingly to what they think they hear. Someone speaking in metaphor or something else, I mean, you could make a lot of arguments that a lot of things are political speech that may not be quite so obvious about that. How do you get a sense as to, could part of the sort of erratic nature in which this has been enforced is just that it's really difficult to do in a consistent way?
Yeah, and they've said as much. And in fact, one of a Capitol Police officer, Captain Todd Heschel, gave testimony for the state, and he said he was asked directly, why are you enforcing this right now, this policy right now? He said, no, we're waiting for the courts to come down with their decision on this. So they're sort of imposing their own injunction on, or they're saying they're imposing their own injunction on citations, but, people still fear that any time they could get a visit at work or get a visit at home or get a citation in the mail, because another thing about their tactics have been they've stopped confronting people directly when they allegedly violate the rules, when it actually happens, and they've gone towards sort of harassing. Really, it's harassment by showing up at people's homes and places of work to deliver citations. So, yes, but you're absolutely right. It's the individual officers have a lot of judgment calls to make in how they enforce these permits.
Who has testified so far?
For the preliminary injunction hearing, the people who have testified were, as I said, Captain Todd Heschel, currently with the Capitol Police, and he made a big stink of talking about how he's third in command and he has so many lieutenants and sergeants under his control, and he's a big control guy. In fact, he's worked for these international private security companies doing trainings all around the world, and is just part of this, security culture. And in fact, someone at the trial noted, oh, look, they're bringing third world policing tactics to the Capitol through people like him and certain of the policing philosophies. Okay, Michael Kissick testified briefly, and also former Capitol Police Chief Tubbs testified, and the chief of the University of Wisconsin-Madison Police Department, Sue Reisling, who was temporarily in charge of internal security in the Capitol during the time of the Capitol occupation and the massive protests back in February and March 2011. Those four people testified.
And who called, who did, on what side did former Capitol Police Chief Tubbs testify?
For the defense.
For the defense or the plaintiffs?
So did Reisling, and so did Kissick. And they were cross-examined by the other side.
Okay,
well.
But were they called by the plaintiffs or the defendants? The plaintiffs.
I'm sorry, the plaintiffs.
Which
gosh,
is,
Steve, and I'm like thinking that this is the first case, by the way, this is the first case in which a participant or former participant in the sing-along has been the plaintiff in a case, and this is the first case in federal court, being taken to federal court, where the state is being forced to defend itself. All of the other 140-plus cases are in state courts and are situations where people are defending their right to be in the Capitol against accusations from the state.
Okay. And where does the trial go from here? What's the next step?
The next step is the judge rules on the injunction, and either way, it will probably proceed to another stage after that. When he opened the hearing, Judge Connolly said, I know that the plaintiff has a lot of arguments they want to make, and I will hear them later, but today we're only hearing on these very very narrow questions. So that was an indication to me that whether or not the judge enjoins the state from enforcing the rules here on out, he still will continue to move towards some kind of trial.
All right. Rebecca Kemble is a correspondent for the Progressive magazine. You can read all of her work on progressive.org. Thank you so much for joining us on the 8 o'clock bus.
Thanks, Brian.